Hello there, this is the TTP Field Manual Podcast. TTP is Trust the Process. I am your host, Joshy. With me, almost always, is Johnny. How are you, mate?
Oh, hi, y'all. How we doing?
How you been? It's been a quiet month for us, hasn't it?
It sure has. Busy life. You've been coming back from travels, slash doing the last year travels, and things just haven't been able to square up. You've still been sick and recovering. I've been busy.
Well, you've been busy in a very particular way.
In a couple of very particular ways, I feel.
Hey, welcome one and all to listening to today's episode. This is our 1 to 2 monthly little mini-series book club, wherein we pick a book and sort of scream it at you every other episode to listen to it. We're finally getting around to Requiem Infernal. Should have done it earlier, but, you know, stuff happens. Requiem Infernal is a Warhammer 40k novel written by Peter Fehervari, based around primarily an Adeptus Sororitas convent. Just putting it out there now, if that kind of stuff seems like something you'd rather, you know, go read yourself and then come back, it's the only warning you're gonna get. All right. Okay.
So, this is it. We're finally doing it.
We got two very important segments to throw in just before we get there, though. Huh?
Oh, mate. One of them I'm not so happy about, but sure.
We don't have to tell them. It's okay.
It's all good.
Show notes, Johnny. What have you got for me?
Follow the links, do the things, leave feedback, join community.
Yeah, exactly. Links in bio, hashtags or something.
Yeah. Join the Discord, come have a chat, chill out.
Yeah, just want to point out that normally I throw in Discord links at the top of episode bios for reasons. I'm not going to be doing that. I'm just going to leave a link to our landing page at the top of the bio. If you are interested in joining into our community Discord, you will find links via that website.
For show.
How's your hobby?
Oh, mate, have I been busy. Holy.
Yes, you have.
Have we got some stuff done?
Oh, I'm excited.
So, first of all, I now own a Bellicor and he is built.
Damn.
We're about to start a new crusade and I'm going to be bringing the Shadow Legion to the fray. It'll be a lot of fun. Ooh. Get my CSM back on the board for a bit and add in a kind of Chaos Undivided super faction with, you know,
yeah, that's fun.
A Chaos Knight, some Chaos Space Marines, some demons all running around. I reckon it's going to be a blast. On top of that, one of our friends and I have spent the last week building a tabletop for us to play on, and it's finally done. We have learned a lot in our little carpentry sessions on how what we will do better next time and what we liked and didn't like. And no, it was a good little learning process so we can potentially look at something else in the future as well. But I've been, pretty busy. I'm pretty proud of what we got accomplished. If people were in the Discord, they would be able to see in the whip, get an idea of what we built.
Join the frickin' Discord. You can have visual props to what we're talking about.
That's it. You don't want to miss out on that part, right? But no, what about you? How's your hobbying been?
I just want to quickly touch up on the fact that you guys built a whole frickin' table. Wood planks smushed together, varnish, seal, felting the table. Yeah, you guys actually did something very frickin' cool.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. You'll definitely see all the things that I hate about it, or maybe you won't. Maybe it's just because we built it and we're but that's wrong.
Maybe I'll look at it and just play a really good poker face. Be like, I don't know what you're on about, mate.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Very diplomatic.
But it's been fun. We'll have to build a couple more because now we have 3 tables that we need, right?
For the sake of budget. We'll make do with only having this one for now, maybe.
Yeah. The idea is that this gives us another play surface that we can put paper mats and stuff like that on that don't have quite as much structure. But it essentially gets us up to 2 stable boards with our original first print and now this one.
Yeah, we're big proponents of the classic Aussie camp table fold-out style.
Hey, they pack away nice, all right?
They really do. And when you need three tables, four tables, those pack-away camping stuff is fantastic. If you've got sort of like a foamy, thin, lightweight kind of board to put on top of those, easy. Which is actually what I'm going to be working on in the later half of the week. I've been scrolling the YouTube, been taking notes on stuff, going to get a little table of my own that can be sort of left in segments or smooshed together as a big old table.
Awesome. Sounds like a lot of fun.
My actual hobbying, though, up until this point, just building, really, actually. My friend and I built a little bit of Space Marines when I got back from being overseas. Very quickly did I get quite unwell.
Yeah, right.
And it was only very recently that I felt good enough to actually, like, you know, focus on such a thing as building models and have almost finished building my 2K of Eldari, of which I actually got to play it against our occasional guest host, Zach, and his Death Guard.
Ooh, spoopy.
Spoopy indeed.
You know what would have been really funny, though?
What's that?
If you had played Sororitas, it would have been a bit of a spoiler for what we're about to talk about.
You know, that would line up pretty well.
The segue would be so good.
You mentioned Crusade, Johnny.
I did.
Starting in the next couple of weeks. Well, there's a good chance I'm going to be playing my Sororitas. There we go. Boom. Done.
But you'll be buddying up with the Nurgle faction.
That's okay. That actually seems really thematic to what we're about to talk about.
But yes, Requiem Infernal. What Requiem Infernal. What a book. Holy.
My pick. My pick. And I think exactly what you just said. Holy.
Holy dooly.
I will eventually offer a bit of context and a bit of a framing device for why we're kind of both being like, holy. But first, I want your first impressions. Your overall impressions.
This book, to me, can be summed up in one question. What the fuck happened?
What the fuck happened? Yeah, kind of.
I was so confused for the first half of this book, what the hell was going on, and I felt like I was just along for the ride. Holy, there was just so much going on. There was some weird, wacky stuff. They started discussing some sort of, like, time travel-y sort of crap. People who weren't dead were dead, and who were supposed to be dead weren't. And I was like, what's going on here? And I had to go back quite a bit to be like, hold on, what did they just, what? Huh?
Huh?
it was a hell of a ride, and some of the characters in this book, I was like, they are weird and wacky. Yeah. I do have to say, though, the novels for Warhammer 40K have a very good habit of making the Nurgle faction sound absolutely horrific, and at the same time, so interesting. These books really did the Nurgle faction justice, in my opinion. Everything was disgusting.
The incarnates and the path of the flies.
Yeah, man, it was... It's always a pleasure reading about the Nurgle stuff, because it's so graphically gross without being off-putting.
I think it's the most easy to wrap your head around when it comes to the four main elements of Warhammer's sense of chaos and hell and altered dimensions. I think Nurgle's the easiest to understand, or at least easiest to write, but yeah, it was really quite cool.
It also just makes for a good bad guy. Like, Nurgle is very easy to, like, run into, understand how they're going to work, what their goals are, and also, like, it's so disgustingly alien that, like, you're grossed out without being offended. Which I think is a big deal, because, let's be real, could you imagine if there was a Slaanesh novel that focused on their stuff and didn't offend anyone?
That would be quite interesting. I would like to see, like, a similar treatment to this for things like, you know, Slaanesh and Tzeentch and Khorne, where it takes almost that subtle influence, not that, you know, over-the-top, perverse twisting of things.
Yeah, there is, from what I gather, some Tzeentchian influence in this.
They're all there, if you pay attention. They're all there.
The Tzeentchian stuff really stood out as being like, oh yeah, that's a bit wacky-fucky.
Wacky-fucky?
Yeah. There was some stuff, but... Yeah, no, it was still a good read. It was just very confusing at times.
Yeah, my overall impressions of the book, and I listened to it kind of in two halves. The first half I listened to pretty much, you know, 7 or 8 weeks before the second chunk. And that first half really felt a bit confusing.
Yeah,
you know,
it does.
The perspective was constantly shifting. And I listened to it all in like a couple of nights. So I was able to sort of like follow along and think about what was going on and be able to draw those connections. But then like when I listened to the second half very recently, that first half felt like such a dream, like in the background. Like if there's one thing that really stood out to me about this book is how it was written. And we'll get into like the, you know, perspectives and like the context of the setting, but the actual like writing of it, like the words and the vocabulary, it was all really like captivating. Like it, you know, when you like step into like other literature book clubs or film clubs, and there's always like that sort of stereotype, you know, book or movie which is meant for like the more higher thinking enjoyer of that stuff. Like, yep. That movie that you'll only get if you pay, like, attention to every detail. You know, this book feels like that version of, like, 40K. You have to really pay attention and pull it apart and revisit it, maybe listen to it again. Which actually brings me to the thing I think was my biggest mistake with this. I should have read it instead of listened to it. Because if I was reading it, I could follow along at my own pace. And go back when I needed to.
Yep. Yeah, just... This definitely feels like a potential read as opposed to listen to. And it might have also helped me because some of these names... Hot damn. It was hard to tell who was who. You got names such as Asenath Hyades and Athanasius and Akashi Batori and... Oh my god, I was so confused at times where
In
I was like, hold on.
Limache.
Who's talking?
Yeah. If you actually pick up the physical version of this book, you will find in the opening pages a dramatis personae, like the list of all the characters filtered by faction or group. You will find as well like an illustrated map of this planet, and all of its various locales are actually highlighted, so you can actually like, oh, that's where they are.
You can follow along. That would have been great.
Yeah, and then if you actually read through the actual text itself, the formatting's different. So for example, in a lot of the chapters, the main sororitas character's doing and like sort of an opening testament or a confession, as if, you know, she was confessing in a church or writing in a journal. And it's all italicized. And then when, let's call them intrusive thoughts, take over the actual narration of her perspective, it does also change the format of the text. So it's not as jarring.
Okay, because I thought Mercy was actually kind of interesting in general.
Yeah, same. It took me a bit to click onto what was happening with that, but when I did, I was like, oh.
Yes.
shall I give now sort of a bit of a context of this sort of 40K subsetting and why it's a bit messy?
Sure.
Cool. So this book is one of what the, you know, lore community call the Dark Coil. The Dark Coil is a few sort of star systems and planets and even characters relatively connected to each other. But the thing about the Dark Coil is that it's all entirely written by one author. All the short stories, all the novels, it's all him. And everything he contributes to the Black Library is in this region. And so every sort of novel and short story can build upon this subsetting without worrying about its connections to other things. And what the author, Peter Feivari, finds most interesting about 40K is how chaos itself, like the altered dimension of reality as a concept, how it would actually manifest for actual mortal minds from like an actual sensory level. And what he's come up with, and this happens a lot more in this particular novel than others in his saga, is that it's really metaphysical. The people are all going kind of crazy because of like warp storms and like your general chaos shenanigans, like the Great Rift is close by, that kind of stuff. And all these normal human minds just cannot comprehend, like, accurately how the dimensions are twisting space and time, contorting memories, to the point where even, like, you know, our main character, Asenath Hyades, reveals bit by bit that she went through a lot of stress in her life as a sororitas to the point where she started to have, like, a multiple personality disorder. But because that personality also perceives reality in a different way, it can invite like the corruption of the warp, right? And this book, I think, was actually one of the last that the author has written for this saga. And all the other books, because they kind of have no like exact sequence, you'll find out, like, I think Jonah Tithe has been in other novels. Athanasius is in another novel quite intensely. We'll talk about it. But this book, he actually even says at the very end of the book in his afterword that, you know, in this sort of metaphysical way, he's describing the narrator. If you listen to the audiobook, there's two narrators. One of them is actually meant to be him, or at least that's what it's implied to be, is like this outside observer unraveling for us, the reader, this tale that they themselves have glimpsed through the wall. Are you following?
Shenanigans ensue.
Shenanigans. And he actually writes in his afterword, not as necessarily the author, but as the afterword of the Torn Prophet, or whatever he called himself. And he actually says in his afterword at the end of the book that the more he's peeling back the layers of this story, connecting the truths, connecting all the symbolisms and the characters, the further that the people hunting him are getting, the closer that people are actually getting to stopping him from pulling back this sort of curtain on this reality he's carving out. And that's actually Black Library Publishing, because in an interview he said, like, trying to get this book through publishing was a really difficult task. Like, he's just been... It was like a really big ask to be like, so I have this book and it's twisted, it's effed up, it's really hard to understand, can we do it? But at this point, he'd written like half a dozen other books that people really like. So they're like, yeah, I guess so.
Oh yeah, you got to finish your series, right?
But yeah, like, I hope that's given a good context to both you and also anyone listening. Any follow-up questions to that?
Not to that, no. But I do have a follow-up question of this book, and that's still what happened.
Okay, so this book really focuses on the planet Vitan.
It sure does. Which is a candle world.
The candle world. Home world of a minor sororitas order called, was it The Last Candle?
The Last Candle. They're focused on more of the healing side of things as opposed to nuns with guns.
Yeah, and they built their order upon this planet based off of their founders, like, visions and manuscripts for this world, like the Torn Prophet.
Yeah, yep.
But as they also explained, this is also the Coronatus Ring. And what that is like this whole planet itself is kind of one of a few. And it's one of a few that you'll see in other books by the author that are kind of like, Eldari plugs in the sink to then, you know, occasionally just like pull the plug and let all the chaos wastewater go away out of their webway, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like the Eldari alternate dimension, they just like, man, whenever chaos piles up, like, let's dump this esoteric energy into planets like Vitan. And so the actual like spires of the sororitas order is built upon like wraithbone constructs that may or may not be some sort of prison for some other warp entities deep below. And just over the centuries, this has just twisted the sanity and laws of reality of this planet in particular, because it's just like this funnel of warp energy.
Yeah, their natural storms are just warp storms that ravage the entire planet.
Yeah, but then because it's so rough, they only have like one freaking spaceport that you have to then from there take this boat called the Blood of Demeter for like 10 days through one of these freaking warp storms to get to the actual Sororitas Order. And that's when we're introduced to a few characters, Asuna Thyades, Jonah Tithe, and their companions, which are a bunch of sick, you know, Imperial Navy void breachers. And even this first chunk of the book, you can tell something isn't right with the planet, with their perspective, as like the first third is just them like waxing lyrical about like, what is this planet and where do we come from and what are we thinking about? Actually, thinking's kind of hard now that we think about it a bit more. Is there a demon on the boat? Nah, there wasn't a demon on the boat. You know, it's all that kind of like unreliable narrator stuff.
Yeah, yep.
What do you think about like this sort of setting, like Vaitarn / Coronatus Ring, opening with like an Odyssey-style story?
The more that they explored and the more they mentioned and all of that, the more I kind of clicked with what was happening. At first, there was like a lot of mystery around, wait, why are we just taking these sick breaches back to some candle world? But as they start to like explain what's happening and they explore a little bit of like this weird bony substance underneath the walls, I was like, hold on a second. There's Eldari bullshit going on. And it took me a while to really tell the breaches apart.
Wait, you could tell them apart?
Oh, not until Lamarche started acting out more.
Yeah, there was only like a couple that they really even focused on anyway. So I don't
one of
blame
them
you.
Died pretty early on. Kind
of. Is that old Toland Feist?
Toland Feist.
Do you want to talk about like the void breaches a little bit? Poor these guys, eh?
I mean, it was nice to see a commissar that wasn't just shooting people in the back of the head. He actually kind of gave a damn about his dudes. Outside of Feist, he kind of hated Feist a little bit because Feist was like the luck god of the group that everyone looked up to, because he always managed to come out no matter how bad things got, and kind of had a little bit of an air of superstition around him. And Lamarche was like very commissar, you know?
Yeah, stick your nose up at the authority, even though this particular authority actually wants to help you out.
Yeah, yeah, but at the start, we find Feist is deathly ill and is essentially...
not having a good time.
He's being kept alive, but not very well. He's really having a bad time of it. Everyone's like, he'll pull through, though, it's Feist. But whatever is infecting him is not a pretty infection.
It's a very interesting infection, isn't it? Because, like, Asenath Hyades, Sororitas POV, she is once upon a time from the Order's Hospitaller, which is just non-combatant medics.
Yep.
And so she's like able to sort of like use like holy balms and medicines and prayers to use like that faith, you know, to keep what's effectively a chaos plague under wraps. But for us, like the readers, like Toland Feist and a couple of others, they keep complaining about like the flies. You know, the flies that are everywhere, you know, the flies that are in the room, that are on the window, they're buzzing in their ear in the night. And everyone's like, there's no flies.
Because they're seeing things.
Or are they?
Or are they? I'm not sure.
Because even Asenath sees things.
Yeah.
She sees, you know, even her memories as the story progresses, and obviously the planet's being engulfed actively by a warp storm. Like, she's starting to relive her memories, but with like fresh eyes. But then sometimes she has a memory and then has like a panic attack because she knows that her memories are being like essentially flipped inside out.
Yeah. Like things she remembers happening didn't or are different.
But there's a particular reason for that, as we alluded to earlier. Like, she's actually gone crazy, in a sense. She's had some rough times. She was, you know, handpicked to join an imperial confessor who didn't turn out to be all that nice of a man. And at some point, she was a sister's repentia. You know, it's even suggested that she was inadvertently responsible for poisoning her canoness. And, like, all of this stuff was just, like, really repressed, especially at first. Like, it isn't until, like, the last half to third, you're like, oh, this girl, like, has messed up quite a lot, actually.
She has been in the wars, you know? But it really does make me question a lot about this woman. Like, is she crazy? Or is she possessed? Or isn't she?
Well, that takes me to probably the most interesting character in this book, only because he's probably the most sane, and that's Jonah.
Sane? I feel like he's also batshit.
Well, he is, but I think Jonah, at least as it's implied at the end, has been going through this broken reality for what's been, for his experience, like, literal centuries, even if it, like, hasn't actually been. He's somehow experienced centuries worth of time on his quest.
Yeah, yep.
He's carrying around a book as well, right?
Oh, mate. Not just any book.
May as well be the flippin' Darkhold.
Mate, this book is chaos as... It's a chaos relic that's literally, like, kind of forcing him to fill it in. It feels like some time shenanigans. This is as Zinchian as anything gets in this book. In this book is this book. And that's a hell of a sentence.
We have Nurgle infecting the Void Breaches. We have the Zinchian relic. Asenath will circle back around to.
Yeah, yep.
But Jonah is so convinced that he's hunting down this rogue element, like, individual that's responsible for everything that's gone wrong.
In his opinion. Yep. Like, I gotta go find my sister. This dude's taken my sister away.
Like, this dude has supposedly cursed Jonah's home planet to eternal darkness, as in literally, like, it's only ever nighttime.
Yep.
And he's just gone far and wide to come find this bugger on this sort of coercion of this Zinchian tome that's filling itself in based on the thoughts Jonah has. And he refuses to read the earliest pages. But then, like, by, like, the absolute end of the novel, the book itself, you know, in the afterword by the author, non-author, is like, do you not realize what this book is? It's your freaking book. This is all of, like, your thoughts and collections about what it is you've been reading. Like, these are all your subjects. You know, this story is only moving forward because you as the reader are choosing to read it. And yes, nothing quite makes sense except for what you want it to mean. And I'm like, oh, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah, it just kept going. And we're like, damn, son, this is as Zinchian as it gets.
And that's what I really like. Like, it, you know, eventually there are demons and there are a little bit of fighting bolter porn, as the kids call it, but it really sells chaos without explicitly slapping you in the face with it, which was such a relief.
Oh, the dark influences as opposed to the crazy people that are charging straight at you with demon arms. Although there's a little bit of that.
There's a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, but that's focused mainly around the breaches.
Yeah, I did prefer the first half of the book, which had this, like, what's kind of going on? Like, it's got a sort of a supernatural thriller, horror as a book, and that was really working for me. And then there was a little bit of that, oh, okay, the Iron Candle has been deployed to fight the demons coming out of the Warp Storm that we've only been vaguely informed about.
Yeah.
And the, like, POV characters are sword swinging and bolt shooting a couple of demons that are a little too close. You know, like, it did get around to that eventually. And that was when I was kind of like, I guess we need it to still be our frickin' 40k novel. But I found the mystery more interesting than the pure chaos of the ending.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. There was a lot of, as I've said a few times, what's going on? Because there was just so much happening with only mystery to solve.
after they sort of pass through the blood of Demeter's, like, voyage third of the book, though, we do get to, as a setting, what was my personal favorite, the hospital, like, I think they call it the Sacrasta.
Yes.
And this was when Asenath really was like, maybe I'm not that crazy to think that, you know, reality is undoing itself. Like, this hospital has really fallen apart since I was last year in a way it shouldn't have. The sister superiors are a little more sadistic than they ought to be. You know, the prisoners here look like, sorry, the patients here look like prisoners when they shouldn't be. There's random people locked up and being experimented on. That's not something we do. Like, it's starting to sort of become a little more horrific, and that was kind of neat.
Yeah, the mysteries of the chaos was just so much fun to read about and see, like, the little influences they've had over time. And, you know, I really enjoyed this part of the book as well. This is when it all started to kind of click in my brain, and it was nice to try and, like, solve the puzzle a little bit.
What were you thinking as you started to solve the puzzle of Sister Mercy?
Mercy is an interesting character.
Yeah.
At first, I sure was just like, why is she talking to herself? What is this going on? And then they started doing some very weird stuff as Sister Mercy started to take control a little more. And they started being like, don't let her, but we're going to let her. We shouldn't let her.
Oops, we just let her.
And there's this section towards the end where she gives over full control and things change a little bit physically. That I was like,
just a little bit.
That's not okay. And it was at that moment I realized, oh wait, Slaanesh is here.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. After our adventures into Fulgrim and Angel Exterminatus and seeing how Slaanesh corrupted the Emperor's children, it was quite refreshing for Slaanesh to be the sly, cunning cat in the room, you know?
Oh yeah, this is the side of Slaanesh that I really like, as opposed to all the over-the-top.
Yeah, we were seeing a lot of Asenath's, you know, memories. We started to sort of see that she was, you know, a Sister Repentia that just kept surviving through unsurvivable odds, like against, like, for example, Eldari Wraith constructs, and, you know, serving with the Confessor. And you start to realize that she's survived quite a fair bit, and that her memory has holes in it, and there's this alternate voice in her head that's really starting to say things of the nature as, well, you enjoyed the killing, didn't you? You enjoyed when I did it for you and spared you, you know, the sacrifice of your virtue. And I'm But here's what really interested me. It wasn't necessarily that Asenath was possessed. It was, as I alluded to before, like, the perspectives of these characters can twist reality to what they perceive it as. Asenath doesn't really know that she is possessed. Like, she doesn't think at any point, oh, Slaanesh has got me. Yeah, like, she never thinks that. And so Sister Mercy is just like another personality, despite being essentially a demonette, to the point where Sister Mercy even, like, is helpful and somewhat positive and caring of Asenath in a way that's not, hey, let's do sex and drugs. You know, it's never that.
It's never that. I love that it's never that.
Yeah, it's always, well, you survived because I helped you survive, you know. That's okay.
And then, yeah, even towards the end, they almost feel like they've built some sort of trust between them. It's really weird. Like, she started to accept who Mercy is.
But when, she's often done this, when she's gone off with Sister Mercy, she's joined up with Jonah Tithe, who's gone ahead of the Sacrasta, to try and find his mark, you know, the whole reason he came here in the first place. And at this point, he'd actually someone Vedas and had actually kind of brought to his side several Sororitas Celestians, which I thought was a really neat tie-in to the upcoming Kill Team. Like, oh, that would have been a good timing. But it sure this would've. Book came out in like 2018.
2019.
Oh, that one. But yeah, he's, you know, he's like on the radio, Asenath, I think we found the source of all of this. Do you remember that Skola that like everyone got turned into a mutant or something? And I'm like, hold on, what?
He connected the dots wrong, but at the same time, it wasn't necessarily wrong.
Yeah, so Asenath slash Mercy leave the Sacrasta after essentially, you know, dealing with a relatively evil Sister Palatine who was using the school as her own sort of like, the hospital as their own sort of Frankenstein laboratory to make fleshy mutant idols to the scriptures of their founder. And, you know, Sister Asenath met up with like a psychic boy that was held prisoner. And even he was just like, yeah, I came from the Skola. You know, I was the only one that survived, blah, blah, blah. And there's all this like, hang on, it's just a random kid in here that survived essentially like a whole school being turned inside out into like a horror show.
And is also a psycho.
Is also a psycho. And then this is like the back third of the book at this point where all the main characters, except the Void Breaches, are all going to this Skola where like the dead are reanimating and trying to fight them, a warp storm's approaching and like there's a firestorm engulfing their island and the reality's really shifting inside the Skola. The walls are bending, the halls are extending, the dome, they're walking on the inside of it, and it's a little hard to follow along, but I found it okay because they would go between like Asenath's, you know, inner conflict with Sister Mercy and letting the demon out, quite literally, the Void Breaches realizing that the hospital has fallen under the corruption of Nurgle as Tolan Fice died to his injuries, which, oh my gosh, but I loved when he said, like, to himself, you know, it was like me dying that sealed, like, your deaths. Like, I was actually, like, holding it back.
Yep.
My willpower was stopping the corruption, but you brought me here, and now it's too late. I'm like, oh, damn. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
And that whole description of, like, the Nurgle plague inside him, just, like, letting him die and then keeps bringing him back. It's, like, just keeping him just on the brink of death until he surrenders.
Very, very evil.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
And then he starts to pick up, you know, those fleshy mutants that the Palatine was putting together, the Palatine herself. And then it mentions a few times that because of how weak the walls of reality is becoming, these Nurgle rarefied mutants and creatures are able to just sort of like walk in and out of the warp because this building is so messed up. So we've had like horrifying Nosferatu-esque boat in a storm. We've had Slasher Hospital. We're having like mind-bending thriller infernal demons in a celestial orrery. Like there's so many like classic horror settings done 40K.
This book did it very well.
Which sort of set piece was your favorite? The boat, the hospital, or the Skola? Or something else?
I think I was actually a big fan of the Skola. I liked as everything was starting to tie in together. It was this really like weird, magical-y sort of vibe going on. We got to see Sister Mercy do some cool stuff, like climb a building. and just like some of the revelations towards the end, especially for like Jonah realizing what happened all that time ago at the start, really just kind of like drew the conclusion and brought all these elements together very well.
Did you have a favorite character?
Oh, Mercy. Without doubt. Girl's got it going good.
What do you think of the audiobook narrator, Emma Gregory?
It took some getting used to. I haven't listened to a lot of audiobooks with female voice actors. But once I got used to like who was who, which voices were what, things got a lot easier. The male voice actor, though, that pops up every now and then, or the boy, is that man's voice smooth as butter?
I believe it's Shogo Miyakari. Gonna get that wrong.
Probably.
Probably.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Shogo Miyakita.
His voice is buttery.
I'm going to look up his 40k reading credits because I want more of him.
Yeah, right.
He was a lot more present at the start when Jonah was talking to the book and then just disappeared until the end. And I was like, no.
Yeah, I was expecting a bit more jump between like male and female voice actors based on what I had heard. But no, it was still a very good read. And
he does all the light scar stuff.
Oh, okay. They even made sure to introduce a space marine amongst all of this chaos.
The guy talking to Athanasius?
Yeah, the Varvassal Cervantes of the Angels Resplendent.
Oh boy, not the Angels Resplendent. Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah, I had to do a bit of research at that point because I was like, who the hell are they? And I'm like, oh, they're like the Inquisition Space Marines. Okay.
Kind of. Do you want a little Dark Coil context to the Angels Resplendent?
Sure, let's do it.
Sure. So all of these sort of outside the first and sometimes second founding legions, eventually like an author just, you know, gets their chance to do something with them, right? They go from an art style and a dot point in a codex to actually like being involved in a narrative. Sometimes they're just the chapter who gets killed in a chaos novel. Oh, well. But one thing Peter does really well with his books is that it's not just sororitas, but like he has a whole book called Firecast, for example, which is all the like naysayer, like kind of lame Imperial Guard regiments that no one really wants around because they just don't listen to orders and just do crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
On just this jungle world that's somewhat sentient against like just their equivalent of like the Firecast Tau that the Tau doesn't like really want to deal with, you know? And so it's just this huge guerrilla warfare between those two factions. Another book is a Gene Stealer Cults and an Admech one. Another book, you know, he does a lot of different factions and does it really well. Yeah. One of the Warhammer horror novels is called The Reverie, and The Reverie is another one of these sort of warp linchpins into reality that just messes everybody up.
That's pretty standard for 40K.
Yeah. But the Angels Resplendent focus in on that, and they've been in a few other short stories. And the Angels Resplendent are a Blood Angels successor who, through just, you know, a lot of meditation and expressing themselves through art and culture, really hold off the Red Thirst and the Black Rage.
Red Thirst.
At some point, Peter Fayavari thought it'd be quite interesting if chaos was to corrupt that vision. What if the Angels Resplendent realized, let's say, that it's Space Marine's fault that everything's gone to chaos, and that they have to be punished for it?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, indeed. So what ends up happening in their corner of the Dark Coil is that actually Athanasius, the boy, eventually becomes their chief librarian. Yeah.
Okay.
And all the librarians, kind of with their higher thinking, are like, that's not really the truth, brothers. It's chaos. Chaos has you in their grip. And the Angels Resplendent are like, nah, we're pretty convinced of this, actually. And end up, like, civil warring their chapter, like, killing all of the librarians and becoming just this somewhat word-bearing, like, renegade-y, you know, it's our fault.
Oh, wow, okay.
And they become, like, the Angels Penitent instead of the Angels Resplendent.
Nice.
There's obviously more nuance to what's going on than what I just said, but that's the Cliff Notes version.
No, I like some chapter growth.
Yeah, but when Athanasius came up, I was like, this name's familiar. And then at the end when he's talking to
Cervantes.
Yeah, Cervantes, I was like, yeah, that's the connection.
There it is. It all clicked.
He's the librarian guy.
That definitely felt like you needed to read previous books to understand this reference moment at the end.
Apparently a lot of Fayavari's works are like that, like characters will just slip in and out. And I think if he wrote more, even characters from like this book might slip into it. Like I know like at the end during all the Zinch stuff, a couple of the sisters of battle just disappeared.
Yeah, they did.
And like it's entirely apropos that they would just like show up in like a different thing. Like, where are we? But even like in the Angels Resplendent, the person that comes to them and is like, it's our fault, he was like a person that might have died in one of the other books, only to wash up on their world and be like, I've glimpsed the truth, like, in death. So it's, like, really just messed up.
Which is fun.
Mm. And then a couple of the characters end the book by being aboard the Blood of Demeter, and then the afterwards, like, this story will never end, just, you know, happen over and over. I'm like, uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Maybe it did, because there's glimpses of ruin and people having passed on and people having, like, traumas, but, like, they're not entirely sure about what happened. So maybe it has happened before.
Maybe.
Man, I'm talking a lot this one. I've been excited. Give me more thoughts, Johnny.
Oh, mate, this is your book, all right? I'm excited that you're excited because, frankly, I had a bit of a trouble getting through this one. There was some cool stuff, but, like, it felt like it was difficult at times to get through.
Would you say you didn't like it because of its difficulty?
I wouldn't say that I didn't like it. I think that's the wrong way to look at it. It was more a case of, like, it didn't feel friendly to listen to in the manner that I listen to books.
Mm, yep.
Because when I listen to books, it's 15 here in the car while I'm driving, you know, is a lot of listening. And this book requires you to focus. But I did really enjoy the book still. It was still fun to read and get through and get a bit of lore behind, like, the sisters. Cause, and to see that they're not all just nuns with guns. Like, there is a branch of them that is completely almost, like, pacifist and focused solely on the healing and apathy. I thought that was really neat. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to sort of go over, talk about with this little book club?
I'm not sure. I feel like we kind of hit everything pretty easily. Like, this isn't a book where we can sit down and be like, this happened, then this happened, then this happened, this happened. Because, frankly, it's all a little intertwined and weird.
And even a little hard to recall as well.
Oh,
which,
yeah,
I think kind of feeds into what the author was going for, actually. How did you feel reading a book in this style? And, like, how it was written compared to, say, Angel Exterminatus, which seemed a little more Saturday cartoon pulpy in comparison.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed this book's seriousness and kind of, like, the smaller scope. Like, it was really focused on a couple of key characters, which was nice. Wasn't as spread out as, like, the Horus Heresy books where there's 20 main characters going all at once.
What do you mean you don't know the third captain of this legion from that other book you haven't read yet?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So, no, it was good. It would have been so much easier if their names weren't literal cactus.
Yeah, my girlfriend reads a lot of, like, romantasy stuff, and whilst I appreciate that some of them do lean more so into, like, fantastical themes than romance themes, the names are either just, like, horse shit or Greg. At least of all of these names, I actually felt like, yeah, that's a 40K name. Even if the name's Jonah, because it's Jonah Tithe. Yeah.
And he's a preacher.
Yeah.
Which was always
funny. Sister Mercy, but Mercy's a demon.
But also, like, yeah, I did enjoy that little bit where it's like, Sister Mercy is actually when she has lost all her mercy. But yeah, I found it a little weird. Also, another question to follow up on in this book. Was Jonah actually a preacher, or was he just faking it the whole time?
Oh, he was faking it.
Okay, cool. It wasn't just me. It definitely felt like he was, you know, the imposter spy breaking in sort of vibes.
Well, he says that a lot, actually.
Yeah, and then just kind of, like, clicked. Yeah, he just kind of clicked with Hyades, and they just got along.
Yeah, they both bonded over suspicion.
Because everything is sus.
But I like that every character has both, like, their pros and their flaws. Like, you know, Jonah, despite being a priest, you know, faking, he also actually, like, takes the time to talk to people like the younger sororitas girlies that are actually, like, looking for a bit of priestly advice.
Yeah, he, like, I noticed that as well, where it's like, oh, yeah, he's preaching. He's filling in his role. Like, he's very good at, like, living in the role as he goes.
And then he runs into, like, the superior of the Celestian squad that ends up helping him get to the Scholar. And, like, the whole time until she basically snorts at his face, like, oh my god, I'm keeping you around, you're really smart. You know, until that point, he's like, man, she's gonna see right through me. She's sharp as a whip. That's a cunning woman right there. And like she is, like she sees everything in a way that not everyone is, but then she gets turned into a Xingqian statue because she was too arrogant in her abilities to not, like, at some point mess up.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, she actually was really arrogant, yeah. But they don't actually frame it as a bad thing.
No, because it doesn't have to be a bad
thing. Yeah. No, and like stuff like that happened like the whole way through.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yep, yep, yep. Would you read another of this author's books, knowing that even though they're all kind of effy-weffy, this is probably the far end of the effy-weffy?
Yeah, for sure.
Cool, cool, cool.
It does make me curious to read more of the series, like the Dark Coil series, just to kind of get an idea of what else is happening, because there's still a lot of questions that are left unanswered.
Yeah. It does seem that, unfortunately, he's not writing anymore,
oh, no.
Or at least hasn't in quite some time. If I look him up, he actually kind of looks a bit like a discount Matt Mercer.
A discount Matt Mercer? What do you mean? He had something published last year.
It's a short story, wasn't it?
Yes. The last novel he did was in 2020, by the looks of it.
Can I filter this through recent?
The Reverie.
It is showing me fire.
Was the last book he did.
Why is it not coming up? You know, you'd think being on the actual Black Library website would have everything he actually wrote, and I don't have to go to Goodreads.
Oh, I'm on Lexicon.
That makes sense.
But from what I gather, a lot of his work is short stories, which is fine. Some people live better in the shorter chronicles.
Oh, yeah, no, he did. I was thinking a little bit wrong about the order of the coil, because I've looked at it a few times, and I just didn't realize that some of these actually came out after Infernal.
Yep.
Aria Arcana, An Angel's Resplendent short story. How about that?
No. Is that where they all off each other?
I don't know. There's a lot of short stories, though.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is a lot of how Black Library treats their less popular authors. It's almost like prove yourself with short stories and then maybe we'll let you do a book.
And then occasionally you go back to the short stories for a bit.
Yeah, all of his stories do tie into his bigger novels though, which is actually like a good reason to pick them up. So many short stories I might read and I'm like, well, what was the point of that?
Well, it looks like a few of them have been put into anthologies as well, so you'll come across them if you're in the right location.
Wait a minute, Johnny. I just remembered once upon a time I wrote a huge F-off Black Library reading guide.
You sure did.
Yeah, you remember this?
I sure do.
I have a Dark Coil chapter, I'm pretty sure.
Ah, do you?
I do. This would have been nice to remember 5 minutes ago. All right, novels. The Reverie. Requiem Infernal. That's a lot of short stories. Firecast.
Yep.
Fire and Ice is a novella, which is bigger than a short story. Cult of the Spiral Dawn.
Which is Gene Stealer Cults that got renamed.
Yeah, I was going to say, you figure out which one is the Gene Stealer Cult. Yeah, it looks like only a few novels and the rest are short stories, at least in this saga.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool. What's next, Greg?
That's a good question.
According to me notes, I was thinking that we kind of go on a bit of a cycle. We have a Joshi pick, a Community pick, maybe a Johnny pick. We circle back around to a Horus Heresy pick, etc.
That'll get us through a whole year, right, at this rate?
Yeah. We did ask in our community Discord for some suggestions. Not many people seem to actually read books, so there wasn't many ideas. But there was two. One of them's not even Warhammer. And I'm kind of down for that.
Are we going to do it? Are we going to do a non-Warhammer book? Are we going to get some fantasy going?
But I don't know if I want to do one that you've already read.
No. You want to. It's a good starting place to the genre.
There was a lit RPG series I kept seeing on bookshelves while I was away.
Swear to God, if you say Dungeon Crawler Dave.
It might be that one. Is it bad?
I don't know. I just see it a lot as well.
Is it Dungeon Crawler Carl?
Dungeon Crawler Carl, that's the one.
Well, I went on IGN's article, 10 Lit RPG Books. He Who Fights With Monsters is number one.
It's so good, dude. It's actually so well read, too.
Okay. He Who Fights... Book 1 of 12.
It's also free, the first book, on Audible.
It's free. All right, we're doing it. He Who Fights with Monsters. Book one. He Who Fights with Monsters. Johnny, I'm going to need you to tell us what a lit RPG actually is.
Okay. So a little bit of a precursor. The genre of lit RPGs is essentially a, for the most part, a fantasy novel where they have introduced some sort of mechanic game sort of vibes to it. So there'll be, like, D&D character sheets, and, like, the characters are aware of their progress and leveling up and things like that. There's a little bit of fourth wall breaking in that aspect. Think of it as, like, an entire D&D campaign, but you also get to understand a new system of how the world operates.
It sounds cool. Very unique. Very modern.
Yeah, there is... The only thing I will prepare you for going in ahead, and it's something that a lot of the books kind of discover later on, is because of the book to audiobook translation, there's a little bit of, like, the guy reading out the character sheet that can get a little repetitive at times, like, just as a forewarning. But a lot of them...
Holy moly, it's 29 hours.
Do you understand why I started this? Because for one credit, or in this case free, you get like 30 hours of listening.
Damn.
It's so hard to go back to books that are like 10 hours long, and I'm like, is that all I get out of it?
Well, you did say reads character sheets a lot, so maybe it's not quite 29 hours.
It's not that bad. Calm down.
Okay. I'm not too fast. I listen to 3 campaigns of Critical Role.
Yeah. Towards later books, as things get a little longer in terms of the reading, they skip through it. Or they'll be like, it's now in its own chapter. You can just skip the chapter.
Okay.
But no, it's good fun. There's definitely, we will get into it, but there's definitely a case of how bad is it going to get for the main character. And that's one thing I really like, is it's definitely an underdog story.
Yeah, I know you like those.
Yeah, to the point where the one I'm reading at the moment is a power fantasy, and I'm struggling to like the main character as much because he's just stronger than everyone.
He's got that One Punch Man vibe going on.
Oh yeah, for sure. But no, all right, He Who Fights with Monsters, Book 1, give me a reason to reread it.
Here's a summary. According to Audible, it was selected as one of Audible's best audiobooks of 2021. Sorry, we've got to get into the, we hoped you enjoyed Audible. You know, the end of all the Black Library and Audible stuff.
All of the Audible stuff, yep.
Jason wakes up in a mysterious world of magic and monsters. It's not easy making the career jump from office supply store middle manager to heroic interdimensional adventurer. At least, Jason tries to be heroic, but it's hard to be good when all your powers are evil. He'll face off against cannibals, cultists, wizards, monsters, and that's just on the first day. He's going to need courage, he's going to need wit, and he's going to need some magic powers of his own. But first, he's going to need pants. After cementing itself as one of the best-rated serial novels on Royal Road with an astonishing 13 million views, He Who Fights with Monsters is now brought to you in a professionally formatted audio.
And the voice actor, man, he is one of my favorite voice actors. He does such a good job.
Heath Miller.
This book is an Aussie in all spirit.
Written by Travis Deverell, aka Shirtaloon.
Yep.
Did I get you excited to listen again?
Yeah, you did.
Cool. All right. Thanks, everybody. We did it.
All right.
We made an episode.
That's it. Wait, show notes. Before we go, remember to subscribe to the stuff, click the links, do the things, come and say hi, and paint your damn models.
Whoops.
Nah, we got crusade prep.
All right, I'm off to do that.
We got crusade prep to do, my friend.
I'm off to do that too. No, Joey, let's be real. We're off to run vaults in Borderlands 4. Come on.
Mate, at this time of night, I'm ready for bed.
What do you mean? It's not 8:30 yet. It's 7:46.
Yeah, but I left home at 5 this morning.
Damn.
I had to drive two hours out of town for work and then drive 2 hours back.
This is how you get through all your books in a week.
Yeah. Oh man, I've done so much driving recently. I've been up and down the mountain almost every day. It's ridiculous.
Hey, as long as you're not driving up the mountain into a firestorm of Zinch demons.
That's it, right?
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Book Club Requiem Infernal. Joshy and Johnny signing out.
Bye-bye.